What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, "What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels?" Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, happy Sunday. It is May 11th, 2025. This is Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. I'm in the newly refreshed WCCO studio for the first time since it's been open, and Josh, other than the carpet, it feels really new. Yeah. and open and spacious.
It's fresh. Yeah, I'm not gonna say it's a new start, but it's a start.
There, yeah. You go. Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and please soak up your day. It's gonna be beautiful. Hopefully brunch is on the agenda, whatever your favorite activity is, may you do it today, and appreciate those moms in the world. We're going to check in on the legislative session. Of course, we've had the fishing opener. As you heard, Adam, from the fishing opener, some protesters up on Cross Lake, Governor Walz. I think that's started to be kind of an expected thing during these times, and yet Governor had four legislative leaders in the boat together. I think that might be the first time that Governor Walz has done that. We'll have one of those legislative leaders on. Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson will join me in the show. And then we'll also have Judy Seeberger. She's a DFL state senator. She has been leading on some of the adjustments to some of the employer mandates. In fact, this last week, she led a bill to modify earned, safe, and sick time. And some of the dynamics and tensions and deals to get done in this last week, if they were to get done, include what will Republicans and moderate Democrats insist on as part of a final package. We know that the budget is number one. While legislative leaders and the governor have been meeting, it's not clear how either close they are or how much progress they've made. And that's because they're all keeping a very optimistic view of finishing before next Monday, May 19th. The constitutional deadline to have a budget will be June 30th. And I've said for months that I don't see them getting done on May 19th, but you just never know. What do you think and what do you want to see in this state budget that will be smaller? 651-461-9226. Send us your texts and let us know, what are you watching in this state budget? I think that is one of the things that I talk to people about every day. Normal people, and hopefully there's some listening this morning, don't always follow the legislative session that closely. And then yet it's out there. I know some business owners that I talked to didn't know about earned, safe, and sick time. They didn't know that these regulations were passed a few years ago. And it's surprising to me that you could own a business in Minnesota and not have known or not be clear about the way in which these rules are instituted. And I think that's one of the worries about some of the employer mandates, is how they roll out, how do they come into action next year? It's already May. Final guidance on some of those programs may, you know, may not work or may not come out until fourth quarter. And how do you plan around that? I think that is one of the biggest questions about these employer mandates that I think people are talking about. And then on the budget, it's going to be a smaller budget because the one-time money is there. There's a small surplus, but in general, the out years look tough. And how do you control that budget? What do you look for when you know that between federal cuts and smaller spending and inflation, those dollars won't go as far? So there's some some prioritizing out there. 651-461-9226. I'm Blois Olson. When we come back, State Senator Judy Seeberger on what she sees at the end of session. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. There's a week left in the regular legislative session, and I thought it'd be good to check in with a couple senators today to see what their take is on how the session looks to be ending, how it's wrapping up, what issues the public should keep their eyes on. First guest is Senator Judy Seeberger. She's a senator from Woodbury. She's a Democrat. Senator, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Blois. Good morning. And I'm going to correct you there. I'm not from Woodbury. I'm from Afton.
I think you had to do that before. I'm sorry. I just think,
okay.
You know, she's from Afton. So there you go. Senator, before we kind of dive into any big issues, what's your sense of the progress leaders have been making in conversations with the governor, if any? And I ask because they all keep saying we're making progress. We just don't get any details. Any sense from you that a deal could come together this week?
Well, you know, I'm optimistic, and I'm getting the same information you are, that it's steady progress, but it's slow progress. It's encouraging to me that they're working together, that discussions are happening. So I'm sort of always an optimist, and I'm hoping for the best, and I think it's possible that we can do it.
One of the issues is obviously the future budget, the deficit in the future, some of the, you know, programs that show projections into the future that lead us into a deficit. There's less money in the budget. How are you looking? How's the caucus looking at the priorities of funding as you go forward? What is the Senate Democrats' kind of key positions as a group on where the budget needs to land?
In the Senate, we're looking to balance the budget out through the tails, and that's kind of what distinguishes us from the House. We are cognizant of the potential for a deficit. We've always been cognizant of the potential for a deficit, and we've tried to plan our budget wisely so that we don't spend our way into a deficit. I know there's a lot of talk about that, but really in the Senate, that's kind of front and center as far as what we're doing when we're crafting our individual budgets.
When you look at those, even talking to your colleagues in the House from your same district, do they have a stronger position on how to balance the budget, or because they're in a tie, did they have to find a compromise? Because as we know, the process works. The Senate has a position. The House has a position. The governor has a position. Those take a lot of work to get to by themselves, and then you have to do the work to get everybody else aligned. Have you talked to House members? How do they sense their caucuses are going to work through the budget?
I haven't really had those discussions with folks in the House, but I do know that when we're talking about making cuts, when we're talking about addressing the potential for a deficit, really hard decisions have to be made. And when various committees and committee chairs are looking at the priorities and the funding priorities that are subject to their jurisdictions, I mean, there's some really hard decisions that have to be made. And I think in either body, once you've made those decisions, it can be challenging to try to consider other priorities. So those are the tough discussions that are happening now. And I'm behind our leaders. I think they can do it, but it is going to be a challenge.
When you look at some of these other issues, early in the session, a group that you're a member of, the Blue Dog Coalition within the Senate, emerged as more moderate members, folks who wanted to do that. This past week, There were modifications to earn safe and sick time. You led them. Democrats teamed with Republicans to pass some of those changes in the Senate. When you're navigating an issue like that, that is very tense within your own party, with your own Democratic colleagues, how do you think about it? And I say that because I've recognized this. Last time you were on the show, it was because you pushed back against some folks who are generally aligned with the DFL. You continue to do that. When you decide to do that, how do you think it through and how do you approach it?
Well, here's the deal. I mean, my district, District 41, is, I always like to say it's 50% Democrat, 50% Republican, and 50% other. And I represent people that didn't vote for me. I represent people that maybe didn't vote at all. And so I don't think that I can go into the Senate staunchly adopting one position that excludes, you know, almost everybody else in my district. So I have to be really thoughtful about the way I approach the work and the policies that are important to the people that I represent. So when you talk about the earn sick and save time, I have employees in my district and I have employers in my district. And I heard loud and clear from the employers that some of the provisions that we enacted in Earn Sick and Safe were not working very well. And so I was proud to carry that legislation and make some improvements so that we have the best and strongest program in the nation that works for both employees and employers.
One of the things when you've pushed back, and you did it again in a tweet this week against labor unions, are those the issues? Is it the earned safe and sick time? Is it employer mandates? Or are there other issues that the public doesn't see that you're getting pressure on, that you want to represent your district and not necessarily, you know, democratically aligned labor unions?
Well, certainly earned sick and safe time was at play this past week and the week prior. So that was front and center when it came to the discussions that we were having. But I do feel very strongly that while I'm grateful for the support of the folks that have endorsed me along the way, and by the way, I've done a lot for labor unions and for labor in general. I've advanced and passed a lot of legislation that deals with things like refinery safety, wage theft. I had a bill this session for increased funding for mental health for folks in the construction trades. And I am a huge champion. I do consider myself a huge champion for labor unions and folks who are the working folks here in Minnesota. But at the same time, we can't do that to the detriment of employers, particularly our cities and counties, small businesses, and entities that are really struggling right now.
When you're looking ahead at this last week, are there key issues you think the public should be watching? Are there issues you're still hoping to get through the Senate or work on with the House that the public should know about and maybe even contact their senator or their representative to let them know where they stand?
The one thing that I'm really keeping an eye on right now is our bonding bill. The House and the Senate are working through differences in priorities for funding. And I'd really love to see some infrastructure, local infrastructure projects included in any bonding package. And the House seems to have a different priority. I was speaking with the leaders from the city of Hastings, who I represent. They have a water treatment plant that is in the works. And without state funding and without federal funding, the costs of that project are going to fall on the residents through increased water rates. That doesn't benefit anybody. We really need to, I would ask people to put some pressure on the House members to really fund these local infrastructure projects to help communities, not just in Hastings, but throughout the state of Minnesota.
When you look at the uncertainty of federal budget, are there starting to be discussions of what might have to be done in the future, maybe even yet this year, to come back after the federal government passes their budget to deal with cuts or issues in Minnesota?
That's always been kind of the worry that's been overshadowing this entire session. And in fact, bringing up Hastings again, some of the federal funding that they were relying on to make up a part of the funding for the water project is either in question or has been cut. So we're seeing those impacts now. as we're moving through this session. And it certainly does throw a ton of uncertainty into the process when we don't know what funds we're going to have available to make up the entire budget. So is there, man, I hope we don't come back, but we might have to if federal funding kind of messes everything up that we've been working on.
Well, Senator Judy Seeberger, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. Have a great Mother's Day and enjoy the weather.
Thanks. Thanks, boys.
No problem. Senator Judy Seeberger, one of the moderates in the Senate, and really what you see as she talks about those issues are the discussions, are the conversations that are getting done. And the idea that she gets friction from Democratic aligned groups when she's just trying to tweak a bill, I think gives you an idea of who the voices are that do push back at the Capitol, even when there's a program that just might need to be better or fixed or easier. And she's certainly been a leader on those issues and probably will continue to be. When we come back, we're going to talk to Senator Mark Johnson. He's the Senate leader. He was in the boat with Governor Walz yesterday. What did he catch? And what's the bait to try to get this budget deal done? I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
On a beautiful Sunday, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Treat them well. They deserve it. They probably should get more than a day, but, you know, we can't get a lot done in D.C. or anywhere else, so I don't want to extend the holiday discussion. Joining me now, Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson. Yesterday, he was fishing with the governor. Today, he's on Sunday Take. He's broad. He's diverse. And what are you doing for Mother's Day, Senator Johnson?
Hey, well, that's a very kind description of you. But yeah, today, Blaise is going to go and meet the governor. So I'm actually up north back home in district. And I'm probably the only legislator whose fastest way down to St. Paul is through another state. So I'm actually in North Dakota right now, traveling back down. But I did get to do the whole Mother's Day thing and dropped off some flowers with mom. So
good job.
A wild day.
Good job. You were on the boat yesterday. You've been in the discussions. You have a week left to figure out this budget. What's your sense of if a deal gets done in the next couple days between the three, the House, the Senate, and the governor?
Yeah, so we're getting pretty late now in the session to get these global budget targets done. You know, we've had some very productive meetings over the last week and a half or so, maybe closer to 2 weeks at this point, getting closer and closer to those target areas. And I will say that the discussions have been respectful. They've been, pretty robust when we get in there. That has been a good process, but man, it's been slow trying to come together and get those targets in a way that both caucuses, the Republican and the Democrat caucuses, can get those through the chambers. So we're working through that. I'm hopeful that we will at this point. You know, the session is coming to a close real quick, so we got to get this done real fast here. That's why I'm coming back down tonight or today here, just so we can get back to meetings and hopefully get that signed, sealed up.
Are you meeting again today?
Yeah, we'll be down at the Capitol today, okay. Later this afternoon.
Okay. As you look at the Senate position, obviously you – Democrats have a one seat majority, but we saw earlier this week on some employer mandates that six Democrats crossed over and voted with Republicans on earned safe and sick time. Do you get a sense that the Senate position has to wait to see what the House does, since the House has the tie? Or how does that discussion come together? Because ultimately, you need a bipartisan vote in the House, while Democrats could arguably pass something in the Senate without any Republican votes.
Oh, you're right. I mean, what a fascinating year for politics. We've been saying that now for maybe the last 3-4 years. But in particular, this year, we have 201 legislators. 100 of them are Republicans. 101 of them are Democrats. What a completely divided legislature now. And so, yeah, a lot of it depends on what is going to work out in the House, being how they are tied exactly. So we know that the bills coming out of the Senate have to reflect some of the priorities that Republicans have. So Democrats have been coming to that realization. And so, as my caucus works very, very hard trying to get these bills to be more acceptable to Republicans, once we send them over to the House, we're going to have a conference committee, and those bills will get massaged more. And we're going to actually look more like a legislature. As you've seen over the last couple of years here in that trifecta, boys, it's been a one-sided discussion. And now we're actually getting the voices of almost all the Republicans, all the Democrats in there, and trying to figure out compromises that, Minnesotans can agree on and thrive under.
What do you see as the sticking points other than the budget? Are there issues that Republicans, because they have leverage, because there is real negotiations, that Republicans either in the Senate or the House, you believe, will hold firm on until, there's a deal on a budget, or that have to be included in a global deal?
Yeah, and so I don't want to get into the actual discussions of what's going on within those negotiations in the governor's office. But I think over the last session here, you've really seen from our side, the Republican side, bringing up some points. There's been a lot of programs that have been instituted by the Democrats here over the last 2 years. And so there needs to be a lot of fixes within them as they start rolling out, and we see, hey, this isn't going to work for our communities. This isn't going to work for our schools, or even, quite frankly, our local governments or small businesses and families. And so we've got a lot of ideas that we've been bringing forward that have really bubbled up from those groups that say, hey, we need these particular fixes to make these programs work. And whether it's paid family medical leave or safe and sick time or the funding for schools or regulations on them as well, like, how can we help them out to thrive in this environment that we have right now, especially with the tight budgets that are going to be coming down the line? And so it's been a good discussion. We've seen a few bills come through that have had some real good bipartisan support. And I'm really hopeful that is going to be the trend going forward, because that's really what we're there to do and to work on and make sure that all those voices are heard. Now, we're not going to have friends 100% on both sides voting for these bills, but I'm really hoping that we can have bipartisan bills that really reflect the needs that have been put to the wayside here over the last 2 years under Democrats.
One of the things that I think the public gets frustrated with to some degree federally and locally is acknowledgement when things aren't what they were said to be. And I'll just say, in Minnesota, fraud would be one of those issues. Do Democrats acknowledge privately that whether it's fraud, whether it's some of the mandates on schools, that they're not what they thought they would be and they do need to fix them? Because politicians of both stripes have just refused to acknowledge mistakes these last few years. And I think people get frustrated by it.
No, I completely understand. I mean, that's the perception that people are seeing. One of the things that I'm particularly disappointed about is, you see the tax bill starting to roll out here from the Senate and the proposals that are being thrown around. And, we've seen over $600 million worth of, waste, the fraud that have been coming out of the legislature and the programs that the agencies are supposed to be overseeing. And the solution to it all the time is, well, we have tight budgets. Yeah, we don't care if we're wasting this money. Let's go back to the taxpayer. Let's grab more. We can just fix this with more money. And I think Minnesotans are getting tired, and they realize that, no, this isn't a money problem. This is a spending problem. This is a fraud problem. This is a waste problem. And so until we can go and fix the systems that we have, the Minnesotans have asked us to put into place, how can we go and ask for more money to run these programs? And it's really disappointing because that is always the answer the Democrats keep going back to. And from our perspective, Republicans' perspective, we need to make sure that a government is really delivering those services in a very effective and efficient way. And we've been trying to do that here, especially this session when we finally have a voice back. And you're going to see some of that product coming out of this legislative session.
The Senate Democrats are touting that, you know, their budget proposal is more responsible in the future years, that it balances the tails, as we call them, where there are major deficits shown. Is that one of the major decisions in the discussions of how to deal with the tails? Because the governor kind of took that position as well, and sure. And the House has a little more risk in the out years, or a little more work to do in the next budget. Is that one of the major discussion points?
Well, I think that's something that we have to be looking at. When you look at a $6 billion budget deficit in the out years here, we have to make sure that we're keeping that in mind. There's a lot of different ideas of how we address that. And so right now, the table is wide open on how that is done. We've got several proposals that really look at making government more efficient for how those out years are treated. But there's some different proposals that are going on right now. But, that's something that we absolutely have to keep in mind because, you know, as you know, boys, we've got a balanced budget requirement. And although it only applies to, you know, the first 2 years of that, you know, the biennium coming up, we want to make sure that we're being prudent in the out years as well, too. So that's all part of, you know, not only discussions within our body, but within our caucuses as well, too. So, you know, that's a big deal when we're looking at these tight budgets going forward.
I know you're not going to get into the details, and I'll save that rant for another day because it seems interesting that you guys keep talking and you're making slow but steady progress, but we still don't know kind of what each side is using for levers. And I think one of the things that you've said is, you know, these are respectful, thoughtful discussions, which is good to hear because, as you know, last session didn't end in that way. It didn't end in a thoughtful way. It was chaos, especially in the Senate. I'll just put it out there. The stakes here are pretty big over the next week because the more contentious this gets, the closer you get to June 30th, the more likelihood that people dig in is my sense, especially during this political climate, especially House Republicans that have the tie. And we've seen, you know, the Senate ended chaotically last year and the House started chaotically this year. So how do you like as you know, the people, and I know the people, too, but help Minnesotans understand the personalities and the way in which the conflicts, you know, it's almost like some of the issues they've already set aside and said, well, we're going to wait on that and we'll try to work out this. Is there a chance that some things get done and some things don't, and some big issues like education or human services have to wait?
You know, I think we'll see how it plays out. There's a couple different avenues that could go. But I will say, you know, going back to just the personalities in the room, there's been a lot of change within the who is representing the caucuses and what's going on there in those final negotiations. Now, I'm actually the only one in a true minority caucus. So, you know, my leverage within the room is a little bit smaller. But, you know, when you talk about folks like Speaker Daymuth, you know, she really comes in with a problem-solving mindset. And so looking for areas of common compromise that makes sense. You know, she's doing a great job with that. And the temperature within there with the other leaders, with Murphy and Hortman, and even the governor, has been very much respectful and low-key, and let's figure out where we can make some adjustments here. But I will say that it's really been a nice room to be part of. But we saw that earlier, too, this year when we had a tie in the Senate. And the discussions that have gone on there and the power sharing, especially in the Senate, that's really all I can speak to. We had a great opportunity to rebuild the trust. As you said last year, with the chaos and the shouting and the way that that whole institution really melted down, I didn't know how we were going to be recovering. And so for us to come into a tie was a way of saying, okay, let's put aside those differences. Let's figure out how we move forward. And we're still seeing some of the fruits of that. And so it's been a different session than I think most years, especially the last 2 years when it's been so contentious. Now we're trying to figure out what those solutions are. So it's been a much better atmosphere.
What did you catch yesterday?
What? So I, you know, it's the governor's fishing opener, right? So I had to catch one less than the governor. He got three Northerns. I caught two, and I had one almost up to the boat. And I think it was the biggest one, too, but it got away right before we could see
really,
it. So,
really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Is there footage of this you want to share? You know, most things get videoed and take pictures. And, you know, I mean, we could use some evidence of that for the newsletter tomorrow morning, just for the record.
No, this is fishing, so you got to make sure that you don't have any evidence. So you can always, you know, fudge around the edges on how big it was and whatnot. So we agreed to do that on the boat.
And then, true question, was there any actual work getting done on the boat, or was it just a good way to socialize and get together?
For the most part, I would say there was very little discussion. It was a way of just getting together, talking about families, and kind of just getting back to the baseline there, which I think we needed. It was a good time to reset, and that's what we did, talking about fishing.
Well, safe travels today. You're meeting with the governor at 4, according to his schedule. So if you know, if you want me to just be in there, just so the public can know what you're talking about, just give me a call. I'll
wait by your phone there.
Okay.
We'll see.
Sounds good.
All right.
Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson, have a great day.
You too. Bye.
You know, I waver between just trying to dig into all these legislators and then let them just say what they're going to say. But I will say that Judy Seeberger and Mark Johnson.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
A little more color than most legislators at this time of the session. It's 9:45. We'll take a break. When we come back, this week's take, it might be about moms, on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. Before we get to your text and the take, a message from Minnesota's hospital. Did you know that in one way or another, Medicaid supports all of us in Minnesota? It's the largest source of federal health funding that Minnesota hospitals rely on to keep their doors open. This critical program faces unprecedented threats that would strip healthcare from vulnerable Minnesotans. It would devastate our healthcare system and shift massive costs from the federal government to the state. We must protect Medicaid's promise of healthcare access for all Minnesotans, regardless of income, age, and health status. You can learn more at protectmnpatients.org. Protectmnpatients.org. A message from Minnesota hospitals. Your texts are rolling in. What do you want the state to focus on? What do you want legislators to dig in on these last couple of weeks? And there's a little bit of a theme here. The two issues that pop up in the text thread the most are maybe not provide free meals for all children at the schools. That there's got to be some way to rein in that program. Obviously, breakfast and lunch was passed by the legislature. It's a very popular program. It's also one of those issues that makes sense. If kids are hungry, they're not going to learn. We need to make sure that they're there. But there is a feeling that if you make a certain amount of money, you should be able to pay for your free lunch. Is there such thing as a free lunch? Well, in schools they are. This is a proposal Republicans have floated, that income of a certain level over maybe $100,000 or $150,000 that you don't get free breakfast and lunch. So we'll see if that becomes one of the issues at the end of the day that Republicans dig in on. The other one I do think is going to be one of the major decisions that will be made at the end of the day. And Governor Walz has signaled that he's open to it last week. And that is to stop free health care for undocumented immigrants. And I say it that way because there's a couple different thoughts on that particular topic. One is Minnesota pays for that. There's no federal reimbursement. So on other healthcare programs, the feds pay part of the bill, the state pays part of the bill, and it's there. But on undocumented immigrant healthcare, there's no money from the feds. So Minnesota's paying the full cost. Last week, Governor Walz said that he understands that that's a concern of Republicans. And he said maybe there's a line that we still take care of kids or we still pay for kids' health care. So he is showing a willingness to compromise there. I think the bigger issue that is not going to be resolved in this session, but you heard Senator Johnson kind of allude to it, is the projections that the budget has for these programs in the budget they passed are blown out of the water. That they get they say it's going to cost, I'll just say, $200 million or $300 million, and it ends up costing $400 million. So it's over budget in the first year. And so the projections don't align. And I think that's where the real questions about this budget are going to have to be determined. Are the projections accurate? Or does that increase the deficit in future years because they've made these commitments? I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take. This week's take is just for the moms. Thanks for all you do. You don't get enough credit. As someone who was raised by a single mom who she sacrificed a lot. And so it's made me a little biased towards the role of moms. And the mother of my kids is a good one, too. And I want to make sure that moms, you get a little recognition because too often you don't. And today's your day. I'll be with Vanita 6:20 all week, Monday through Thursday. Next Sunday, we'll know whether or not we're going to have a special session or we're not. And if we are, it's going to take a while, I think, to find this budget deal. Legislative leaders will meet with Governor Walz today. We'll have an update about that tomorrow. The Frost play tonight. They're tied 1-1 with Toronto in the PWHL. The Timberwolves are up 2-1. Is Corzo in today? Or?
Yes, sir. Corzo's here, and we'll be, rest assured, we will be talking Timberwolves. Are you going to stay up late tomorrow night for game 4?
How late do I have to stay up?
Well, it's a 9:05 tip.
I will stay
up right away at Tuesday for that hit with Vanita.
Oh, so. I know. Trust me, I've made this turn a few times in my life, Josh. I think I'll watch. We'll see where they're at. I have this philosophy, A, about Minnesota sports, but B, just about late night games.
Yeah.
If I stay up and they lose, then I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
If I wake up and they won, I'm in a good mood.
That's true.
And so if I wake up and they lost, I'm glad that I didn't waste that time. So I like most things about sports, Josh, I try to be really rational. Are the Frost going to win tonight, Josh?
Hopefully. Defending champs, they didn't have the I wouldn't say they've had the dominating season that they had last year, but they found their way into the playoffs, and this is kind of where all the chips matter, where they put it all into it. And Taylor Heisey is still one of the best players out there, and that's just a starting point for how good they are. So.
And we'll have Twins baseball later today too, right?
Mm-hmm. Twins riding a 7-game winning streak.
I mean,
it's our year, Blaise. It's our year.
Josh, I'm going to hold you to that in October. Thanks for listening to Sunday Take. Corzo's up next. Talk to you soon.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us, listen to the Powers That Be, wherever you get your podcasts.